This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off this week. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on May 22nd, 2025.
Don't touch Social Security. Don't touch Medicare. Medicaid, just leave them alone.
We will not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid benefits.
I'm not going to touch Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Well, he hasn't touched Social Security yet. So there's that.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Too numerous to mention because we've got such a busy show. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us, and welcome to another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Our semi-regular roundtable guests, perhaps I should say our irregular roundtable guests, Digby and Driftglass will be joining us momentarily, and Desi Doyen, of course, you heard chuckling there. She's always here.
Yep.
She will have our latest Green News report as we try to wrap up some loose ends before a much-needed holiday break next week. But Desi Doyen, as I understand it, in your Green News report, nothing but good news to help kick off summer. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. We'll say that.
All right. We'll go with that. All of that, even as the horrors and errors and blatant thuggish authoritarian violations of court orders continue in Trump's regime, his clownish yet cruel and unlawful mass deportation efforts. Meanwhile, their efforts to weaponize the criminal justice system against government officials that they perceive to be opponents to their agenda, with various buffoonish extrajudicial extra-constitutional schemes, is proving to be equally inept, if no less dangerous, to the constitutional order. On Wednesday afternoon, a magistrate judge upbraided federal prosecutors as he granted their request to dismiss its trespassing charge against Newark Mayor Roz Baraka, calling the government's abrupt about-face a worrisome misstep. That's a nice way to put it. In a case that has stoked a political firestorm, as the Washington Post characterized it. Quote, "An arrest of a public figure is not a preliminary investigative tool. It's a severe action," U.S. Magistrate Judge Andre Espinoza scolded Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephen Domanovich during a virtual court hearing. Quote, "It should only be undertaken after a thorough, dispassionate investigation of credible evidence." The apparent rush in this case, Judge Espinoza added, culminating today in the embarrassing retraction of charges, suggests a failure to adequately investigate. Your office must operate with a higher standard than that. Good for him, though good luck on that. Donald Trump's personal defense attorney, who lost him case after case, but who is now serving as interim U.S. attorney anyway, Alina Haba, offered no explanation whatsoever for her decision to drop the misdemeanor trespassing charge that her office filed against Roz Baraka, Newark, New Jersey's popular Democratic mayor, following his controversial arrest this month outside the Delaney Hall Immigration Detention Facility in his city as he was attempting to cite the private company which runs the facility for ICE, for lack of proper permitting. Chaos ensued as masked and heavily armed federal goons descended upon the mayor outside of the facility to arrest him, while supporters and three Democratic members of Congress were there to inspect the facility. As per their lawful rights as Congress members, they surrounded the mayor as they were trying to arrest him. On the same day that Haba dropped the charges against the mayor, Less than a week after his arrest, she charged Congresswoman LaMonica McIver there to inspect the facility with assaulting two ICE agents during the clash that erupted on May 9, as agents swooped in to detain the mayor. The congressman and the other Democrats in Washington have decried her prosecution as an attempt at political intimidation. And video evidence of the congresswoman's supposed, quote, body slam of an armed federal agent appears to be nothing of the kind. And I expect those charges will be dropped as well, or if not, they will fail miserably if Haba is dumb enough to actually bring this case to trial. At Baraka's hearing on Wednesday, Assistant U.S. Attorney Domanovich sidestepped the judge's demand to explain how prosecutors could have said just last week that they were fully prepared to take Baraka's case to trial, only to move to drop the charges days later. Quote, "Your role is not to secure convictions at all costs, nor to satisfy public clamor, nor to advance political agendas," Judge Espinoza said. "Your allegiance is to the impartial application of the law, to the pursuit of truth, and to the upholding of due process for all." Dismissing the case, Domanovich responded in kind, quote, "That was the most appropriate resolution in the interest of justice," he said. So, yeah, when the rubber met the road in the Trump administration's attempt to weaponize the criminal justice system against its perceived adversaries, the Trump administration caved, at least for now. And they attempted to save face by simply replacing charges against one black Democratic official, the mayor, with another, the congresswoman, who, like the mayor, says that she, too, intends to fight the charges after Haba's office had attempted to get her to strike a plea deal, which she refused to do. Quote, "The Justice Department and Alina Haba wanted me to admit to doing something that I did not do, and I was not going to do that," McIver said after the ridiculous charges were announced, adding, quote, "I came here to do my job and conduct an oversight visit, and they wanted me to say something differently, and I'm not doing that," she told CNN. Pushback works against the Trump administration. They are bullies, and bullies tend to back down when they are confronted, when their victims refuse to roll over to their bullying. So good for the congresswoman. In other news today, speaking of cruelty and bullies, Republicans in the U.S. House overnight and into Thursday morning finally passed their version of Donald Trump's cruel legislative agenda by a single vote, thanks to recent deaths of Democratic House members that gave House Speaker Mike Johnson just enough room for his party to approve a nearly $1 trillion worth of cuts to health care and food nutrition assistance to low-income men, women, children, and the elderly, which, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, will also trigger another $500 billion in cuts to Medicare. So Medicaid and Medicare, that despite Trump's long repeated vows to not cut either of those health care programs, turns out he was lying, or at least he will be if this reconciliation measure passes through the U.S. Senate, where only a simple majority is needed to pass it. Before then, another likely vote by the Republicans in the House, and then it heads to the president's desk at some point over the summer. That's the theory. All to help pay for huge tax cuts, mostly for rich people and corporations, while raising the national debt by trillions of dollars. In brighter news for now, the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday, with Trump appointee Justice Amy Coney Barrett having recused herself, tied 4-4. In a single-page opinion upholding Oklahoma's Supreme Court ruling, believe it or not, finding that the Oklahoma Attorney General's attempt to force the state to fund religious charter schools with public taxpayer money is a violation of the Constitution's separation of church and state. While the per curiam order mentioned Barrett's recusal and that the matter was a tie, thus upholding the state court's ban on public money for religious schools. It did not say which of the court's Republican appointees joined all three of the court's liberals to safeguard about 250 years of separation between church and state as mandated by the nation's founders for now. That's a bit of a surprise, frankly, though, when we spoke about the recent oral argument in this case on this program with Daniel Mack of the ACLU's Program for Freedom of Religion and Belief. He was hopeful for exactly the outcome that we saw on Thursday from the U.S. Supreme Court. Go figure. There's at least some good news as we head into summer. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's Department of Defense has accepted $500 billion jumbo jet for Trump's personal use from the royal family of Qatar. The president of the United States continues to attack Bruce Springsteen for some reason and ambushes the president of South Africa with a white genocide conspiracy theory. Trump's secretary of the Department of Homeland Security has no idea what habeas corpus means. Republicans in the U.S. Senate today have nuked their supposedly beloved filibuster to block clean air laws here in California. The corporate media is distracting Americans by encouraging voters to waste their time by talking about Jake Tapper's new book on Joe Biden, and a whole bunch of other stuff is all going on, much of which is too stupid for even us to waste our time on, at least usually. But not when Digby and Driftglass are here to help us get over the holiday finish line. Joining us now are our two old school OG blogger friends, who are almost always right about almost everything over the past 20 plus years or so. Heather Digby Parton is the much beloved award-winning blogger and columnist for Salon and her own Hullabaloo blog, often simply known as simply Digby. And Driftglass is the mostly beloved blogger and broadcaster from his eponymously named Driftglass blog and his weekly professional left podcast, hosted each week, rain or shine, with his wife, Blue Gal, from the cornfields of Flyover Country, Illinois. Hey, guys, welcome back to the broadcast.
Good to be here.
Hey, anytime you want to talk stupid, just call us, you know?
We're ready.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know. All right, let's start right off the bat with the stupid. And, you know, time, it seems to me, has become completely meaningless. I was incredibly, and I looked this up. Pope Leo, the first North American pope ever named, was elected at the Vatican just 2 weeks ago today. Feels like it was months ago.
I was so young then.
I know. So we'll see how much madness that we can fit into this very short time frame. But let's start here with Donald Trump. As you heard at the top on the campaign trail, promising to not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid, it seems now that he is supporting cutting at least two of the three of those. As he spent the week bullying his Republican caucus in the House to approve a bill calling for more than $600 billion in cuts to Medicaid for low-income and disabled Americans. That will trigger another $500 billion of cuts to Medicare. Actually, what will trigger that is increases to the deficit by trillions of dollars, according to the CBO, all taking away, you know, health care for as many as 14 million Americans, all in exchange for huge tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires. I want to get both of your thoughts on this, whether it will finally be passed in the weeks and months ahead, largely as is, and what, if anything, will be the cost to Republicans and, of course, the American people if it does. Ladies first, let's start with Digby.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being had. Yeah, go ahead.
This budget bill is an absolute atrocity. They had to do it in the middle of the night. Nobody's read it. We're finding out things minute by minute that are in it that nobody knew about. It's a complete travesty. And I think everybody knows it. In fact, Hakeem Jeffries was on the floor today saying, well, I guess you can say goodbye to your House majority. And he was right, because they are not going to they're not going to keep the House. And I don't think they would have anyway, but I think this just put the final nail in the coffin. This is just way too much. And even though the Senate's probably going to, you know, mitigate some of the worst of it, and maybe they'll all declare an emergency so that they can get past this PAYGO rule that would require them to cut Medicare by half a trillion dollars.
Yeah.
It's still a travesty. The headlines are terrible, and they're going to stay that way.
Desi Doyen, put a mark there because we may want to play Digby's quote that they are going to lose the House.
Not exact quote. Mine wasn't, but it's something to that effect.
Something to that effect. All right. We'll need that a year from November. Drift class. Will there be any price to pay here? Do you agree with her for cutting health care, as I said, to as many as 14 million Americans in exchange for tax cuts to the rich and blowing up the deficit, which Republicans used to pretend to care about, if I remember correctly, though only when Democrats are in power, I guess?
Yeah, you remember wrong, Brad.
The
sort of larger picture is this is all bog standard Republican ideological fulfillment going back to before Reagan. They've been dead set against all programs that take money from rich people mm-hmm. and disperse it to poor people since forever. Mm. And they've never made a secret about it. They've made a secret about doing it because you don't want to talk about that stuff. You stick that stuff inside of other bills and you nibble away at it and you make Democrats do it like Gingrich and Clinton. Mm-hmm. But they have always, this is just literally Trump delivering on the promise that Reagan made. And yeah, there'll be a price to pay. They'll probably lose the House. I'm 100% with Digby on that. Probably by 40 seats, I'm guessing. Mm. But Trump doesn't care. Why would he care? He's protected. His billionaire friends are protected. And once it's done, you know, once the car's driven off the cliff, the car's off the cliff.
But like, didn't he say
in Iraq, all you got to do is go in and then you're in forever?
But didn't he say over and over again, not going to touch Medicaid, not going to touch Medicare?
Yeah, you know, I hate to break it to you, but he lies rather a lot.
What?
Like a dog that, let's say, cleans themselves.
Who knew?
He does that with that level of frequency.
Okay.
And he's not lying to us. He is giving his base excuses to keep loving him and hanging on to him. And they don't care that it's a lie. All they care about is that he's their lord and master. He's making us cry, and that makes them happy. So that's all that this is about.
And keep in mind that he also has said an excuse is, we're not cutting Medicare. We're Medicaid. We're cutting waste, fraud, and abuse.
Exactly.
You know, his followers are just dim enough to buy that. Sure. Yeah.
Well, we'll see if they buy it when they're the ones who actually lose their Medicaid, because there's a lot of these folks who voted for Donald Trump who get Medicaid through the Obamacare exchanges and so forth.
Yep.
So that could be costly. All right, let's move ahead to the fascism. Drift Glass, on Wednesday, a judge in Boston became the third, I think, it's hard to keep track, maybe the fourth, to accuse Trump's Department of Justice of, in this case, quote, unquestionably violating court orders regarding migrants, upbraiding Trump attorneys for that, and brazenly violating the due process of migrants that were shipped off to South Sudan, where the migrants are not from, in violation of the judge's order to not send anyone to a third country without giving them adequate due process first. Now, it seems like the Trump administration is hoping to have the Supreme Court rule on, I guess, constitutional due process and what it actually means. But I'm not sure even this corrupted Supreme Court will go along with what the Trump administration seems to want here. What is their game here? How do you see this playing out?
Well, first of all, what even is habeas corpus, Brad? I mean, does anyone even really know what that means? I certainly don't.
This, I do. This woman.
It means that the president gets to deport anyone he wants.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
I heard it on Barstool Sports, I think. I'm pretty sure that's where I heard it. And where 20 million other people apparently heard it. No, it's just, this is how you steal. You grab as much as you humanly can, stuff your pockets with as much as you can. And I mean, in terms of destroying the Constitution, you just grab for everything. And the courts will slap you down, but there'll be 10 other things to get through. It's like a, you know, this is a mass weapon attack. It's like raining missiles down on an enemy target. Some of it's going to get through, and they'll get most of what they want, because the Supreme Court will take a case here and take a case there. But in the end, they know that they've immunized against Trump against anything. any criminal activity taken in the name of his office. Mm-hmm. So he's free to do whatever he wants. And his minions are just going to be pardoned no matter what he does. So they're fearless at this point, and they have reason to be.
Digby, Trump has said repeatedly, of course he would follow Supreme Court orders. You know, if it comes to that, I guess the lower courts don't matter. The appeals courts don't matter. The only thing that matters is the Supreme Court. But is that even true? Will he actually follow Supreme Court orders if some of this stuff finally makes it up there? Some of it already has. And you know, told them he must facilitate the return of Abrego Garcia and so forth. And they're like, well, you know, who knows what facilitate really means? I mean, are we going to see that constitutional crisis that so many of us have seen coming for so long?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I think the key is what you just said. Who's to say what facilitate really means? It's who's to say what follow really means, or who's to say what orders really means? You will recall that not too long ago, they were in the Oval Office, and Stephen Miller stood up and said that the Supreme Court had ruled 9-0 that the courts have no right to interfere in the foreign policy of the United States. That is not what that order said. It was not. It was the Abrego Garcia order. Mm-hmm. Trump believes it because he's been asked about it a number of times, and he keeps saying, well, that's what they tell me. You know, that's a subject for another question, maybe, about where Trump's head is with this stuff. But in any case, I don't know that they're going to say that they're going to admit that they're not following it. I think what they're going to do is just delay, try and interpret this as following it, even though it patently isn't. Right now, in the Boston case that you're talking about with the South Sudan guys, they're holding them on an airplane in South Sudan. They're holding these immigrants mm-hmm. there, and that rather than just bringing them back and letting them have the hearing that they're entitled to, they've decided instead to hold them on the tarmac, and they're going to bring in, I guess, lawyers or do something so that they can get their hearing, which they apparently believe is rubber stamped, they're out, and then they can just open the door and let them off. So that's the kind of thing that they're doing. So, you know, I don't know that we're there yet. Maybe they will just openly defy the Supreme Court, but I think they've found other ways around it. Mm. This is Stephen Miller. He's just saying, no, okay, well, let's try something else here, and then we'll do habeas, and then we'll do this. So I think that's where we're at. It's just delay until, you know, everybody's dead.
Yeah, well, and even South Sudan apparently said they don't want these people, so they're going to be shipped somewhere else. I don't even know where. Well, I think they said we're actually going to send them to their home countries, which, had the Trump administration done that, we wouldn't be in this mess. It's unclear to me why he's even sending them to South Sudan. One of them's from Mexico. One of them's from Cuba. Looks like they're going to end up there anyway. So I'm not even sure what's the logic. What's the point?
This is why we need Greenland. Obviously, this is why we need.
That's it. Well, we haven't got Greenland yet, but we do apparently have brand new jumbo jet. On Wednesday, the Department of Justice said it accepted that tricked out $400 million Boeing 747, the so-called Flying Palace from the royal family of Qatar. Nice of them that Trump wants to use as Air Force One and then keep for his own personal use after his presidency. Something previously known as a massive bribe and still known, I should think, as a strict violation of the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause, barring gifts to public officials from kings, princes, and foreign states. And it is all, according to a helpful montage from The Daily Show, something, again, that Donald Trump used to be against. See if you can tell which one of these is Trump talking to Hillary Clinton back in 2016 about money that he claims she took from Middle Eastern interests, and Trump talking now regarding the Qatari jet.
Saudi Arabia giving $25 million, Qatar, all of these countries. These are people that kill women and treat women horribly, and yet you take their money.
It's not a gift to me, it's a gift to the Department of Defense. And you should know better.
Why don't you give back the money that you've taken from certain countries that treat certain groups of people so horribly?
You should be embarrassed asking that question. They're giving us a free jet. I could say, no, 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 don't give us, I want to pay you $1 billion or $400 million or whatever it is. Or I could say, thank you very much.
Why don't you give back the money? I think it would be a great gesture.
I thought it was a beautiful gesture. Now, there are those that say we shouldn't be accepting gifts to the Defense Department. And I would say only a stupid person would say that.
It should have never happened. And I think you owe an explanation to the American people.
We're giving to everybody else. Why wouldn't I accept the gift?
Have I ever said that? That's quid pro quo.
So he used to know what quid pro quo meant. Now, the DOD claims that it's going to, quote, ensure proper security measures somehow before the plane is used by Trump. Drift class, will it ever be used as Air Force One, or will this just end up being a gift straight into the pocket of Trump for his private use after his presidency ends? End of story.
If he has the authority to just take this thing and declare it to be my plane and fly it around, then it'll be used for that. But they have to take this thing apart down to the last bolt to check it out. They have to upgrade all the systems. They have to put in all the special stuff they have on Air Force One, which means it won't be ready for anyone to use for a couple of years. And it'll cost the taxpayer about $1 billion, give or take, from what I hear. So it's ludicrous. This is just candy, a big shiny candy. But on the other hand, what even does emolument mean, Brad? Does anyone even know what that word means? Because words apparently don't have meanings anymore, at least on the right. And you can't pry anyone on the right loose of their lips on his behind long enough to get them to admit there's anything wrong at all. And since all of his people are in charge of the government, and since the former lobbyist, I believe, for Qatar is now our attorney general, is that correct?
Yes.
Paid for $100,000 a month, I believe, for her services. This is just out and out. Why hide it when you could just loot in public? And that's all this is.
And stick it in everybody else's faces that, look, I'm doing it and you can't stop me.
Exactly. It's an act of domination, and he's just a giant greedy hole of need and narcissism.
Can I just add a little fact check here?
Yeah.
It wasn't a bribe.
Yeah.
What we found out in the last few days was that Trump said he's embarrassed flying around on Air Force One because it's so tiny and he hates tiny things. And so he told the Pentagon that he wanted them to find him a new plane because the new Boeing Air Force One isn't going to be ready. So they went out looking for planes that were for sale.
Yep.
And that ended up Steve Witkoff, his emissary, the former real estate guy from New York, who is all over the world doing things. He went to the Qataris and he said, you know, we see that you've got this nice plane for sale. And they said, oh, yes. Now, they've been trying to offload this thing for years, and they couldn't sell it because it's ridiculous. No normal person would even want to fly on it because it's so over the top. But they said, oh, sure. And Witkoff said, well, can you come down and show it, you know, fly it down to Mar-a-Lago and let Trump have a look at it?
Yeah.
And so, yes, they flew it down to Palm Beach. Trump took a tour and he basically said, yes, I'll have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's talking about prices. The Qataris see that, and the Qataris at that point go, oh, please let it be our gift. Well, you tell me, is that a bribe or was that extortion?
Well,
because to me, it sure sounds like I'd like you to do us a favor. Though, you know, that's the kind of, you know, they knew exactly what was going on there.
Well,
and that was Trump saying, I'd like a little, you know, give me a little sugar here, guys.
Well, and it actually, when you say, was it a bribe? It'll have to be extortion because apparently it can't be a bribe. We had Randall Eliason, who used to run the public corruption unit at the DOJ on the show, explaining why, because the way the Supreme Court has changed the meaning of the word bribe, that you actually, it's not enough to give something to someone. You actually have to promise to give them something in return. He said that Qatar could have given $400 million in cash to Donald Trump, literally put it in his pockets, and that is no longer defined as bribery anymore.
As long as they say, gosh, it's just because we like you.
It's a gift.
We just love you.
Right. But then there was Trump, and we don't have the audio, but Trump was speaking in Qatar saying, you know, you guys have given us this gift, and wonderful things are going to happen to you now. So I think there actually is a good case for bribery to be made. Okay. Yeah.
Spiro Agnew is spinning in his grave right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. And and then there is the emoluments clause. They can bring a case there. The question is who can bring it, who actually has the standing to do so, even though it is an old-fashioned word like groceries. Okay, before we get to our break here, one more, and we'll come back with our lightning round of dumb Trump-related things. On Thursday, Senate Republicans finally nuked the filibuster. And I want to make sure everybody knows that. They did so, in this case, to ban California's own clean air pollution laws. Begging the question, whatever happened to states' rights that Republicans have pretended to defend for decades? And they nuked the filibuster to ban clean air while Democrats were too frightened to nuke it for voting rights and reproductive rights when they had the chance. Digby, any thoughts on that today?
Yeah, I have a few thoughts on that.
Thought you might.
They it's even worse than just nuking the filibuster. They basically have now said that they no longer have to follow the parliamentarian rules.
Yeah.
And they've done that on rare occasions in the past. And John Thune is up there saying, oh, well, this is a very special case because this California clean air thing is so bad. We really have to do this. No, this is the new thing. The Senate now, all bets are off. It is not, I think the filibuster is dead. And I think all the Senate rules are dead if they in any way interfere with what they want to do. If John Thune, who's supposedly one of the normal guys, is making these kind of Trumpian excuses for things, then, all bets are off. So, get ready. And it'll be very interesting to see how this works when they get over there with this, heinous House budget bill and see how they start handling this stuff, because I could easily see them just dropping everything. Like we said earlier, that they can, eliminate the PAYGO bill, the PAYGO, requirements. For the Medicare cuts, they can get rid of those. I think it's just going to be like, untrod territory. I mean, this is really, really dangerous stuff.
Driftglass, Heather says the filibuster is dead. Question is, if that is true, do Dems understand that it is dead? And will they, march all over the filibuster's dead corpse next time they finally get control in the Senate?
They do not yet understand it. I think Cutter has a much better, clearer understanding of the world we now live in than Senate Democrats do. It is a world of tyrants and bribes and extortion and influence. I think way too many senators still want to play dainty. And I think that's insane. I understand they're institutionalists. They've been in there a million years and they want it to be the old way. And it's just not the old way anymore. Correct me if I'm wrong. There is an element in the big, beautiful bill that would make it difficult or impossible to filibuster like the will of the king or something like that. Do I understand that correctly?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's that when they put it in at like 1:30 in the morning. Yeah. I think it's right there. Yeah.
Some formal removal of any ability to oppose anything Donald Trump wants. Yeah.
Actually, that's literally true when it comes to the tariffs. They're actually saying we've abdicated all responsibility for tariffs in this bill to the president.
That's in the budget bill that supposedly they can't take it back until they vote to take it back.
I mean, yeah, they'd have to vote to take it back.
Fantastic. Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, the world of tyrants, bribes and influence will continue after a quick break here on the broadcast with our special roundtable guests, Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass. Yeah, that's it. Take a quick break and we'll be right back with a lightning round. I'm Brad Friedman and this is the broadcast.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
So, Secretary Noem, what is habeas corpus?
Well, habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country
Habeas corpus, that's incorrect. Upside down, you turn me, you're
giving love instinctively. Oh my God. I say to be respectful. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com with Heather Digby Parton and Drift Glass and, of course, Desi Doyen in our roundtable before we head into summer. All right, Christy Noem's comments there. Frankly, the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security thinking habeas corpus means the opposite of what habeas corpus means. Well, those are too dumb even for our lightning round of dumb stuff here today. So let me start with Digby on this, with the right wing, and I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on this, with the horror from the right and the pearl clutching this past week over former FBI Director James Comey posting a photo of seashells that he found on the beach, spelling out 8647, which Donald Trump claims is a secret code calling for his assassination. Any thoughts on that dumb news?
Yes. I wrote a piece 20 years ago called The Art of the Hissy Fit. It's still online if you want to find it. Tells you everything to know. This isn't a Trump thing. It isn't a MAGA thing. This is a Republican thing, and they've been doing it forever. That was written in response to the Wellstone funeral, which many of you will probably remember. You know, complete hissy fit over that. Having said that, this particular thing, I went back and looked, and I don't know if you want to buy a T-shirt that says 8646.
Yep.
Tons of them out there, and they were selling long before Trump ever came back into office. So, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. This is complete and utter nonsense. And
it's only okay if you're a Republican.
I'm pretty sure that Don Jr. had put up an 8646 thing on Twitter at some point. Driftglass, you got anything on that, or should I move to Springsteen? Up to you.
No, we all know that the secret codes are hidden on the knuckles of people that have been photoshopped to read whatever they want.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Fact check true, and you should be ashamed of yourself if you don't agree. All right. Drifty, you strike me as somewhat of a Springsteen fan. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing. But this week, Trump has spilled no small amount of pixels on dumb postings at a social media site calling Bruce Springsteen bad names because Bruce dared to call Trump out as a rogue fascist president during his tour in the UK. But then Trump said, quote, "We'll see how that goes for Springsteen when he returns." And he called for a, quote, "major investigation" of his endorsement of Kamala Harris. Any thoughts on that dumb news?
First, the president rage tweeting against Bruce Springsteen at 1:30 in the morning makes me want to delve even deeper into Joe Biden's cognitive abilities.
Oh, we'll get this.
That's the issue.
That's next.
Secondly, again, since we're flashing back to previous times, you might remember a group that used to call themselves the Dixie Chicks. Said, I think, 12 mean words about George Bush while they were overseas, and their career was ended. They dropped a house on them. So this is nothing new, except now Donald Trump is really going to go all out. He's here for the retribution. He really is. It's not incidental to the thing. It's the reason he's alive and kicking.
Absolutely.
Is America not going to stand behind Springsteen in this battle? Come on.
Hey, they rejected NASCAR when NASCAR was nasty to them. They went against the NFL. You got to be careful when you say America, because a whole bunch of Americans are brainwashed husks, and they will do whatever the dear leader tells them to do. So tomorrow, you know, they used to love country music, they used to love the Chicks, but then they said mean words, and now they're dead to them. So that's why we call them on the professional left reprogrammable meatbags, because they will believe whatever the dear leader tells them to believe.
Yeah. I can't imagine them going after Springsteen. Really? We'll see. Yeah.
Well, I'm actually kind of baffled. I shouldn't be, I know, but I still retain the capacity to be baffled at the MAGA folks who really look at all the stuff that Trump does that is just so weak. I mean, a weak person cares what somebody says about them on something that doesn't really matter. So I don't know. I just find that to be surprising still.
Well, you would say that because you're a fascist rogue producer.
And I'm still kind of amazed that the Reagan people never actually listened to the lyrics of Born in the USA.
Right.
True.
Yeah. No, they think that's an American anthem. So they still don't know. Well, maybe now they'll start here. Now they'll notice. We'll see. All right. Perhaps the dumbest news of all. At least as I see it over the past week, or more than the past week, CNN's Jake Tapper has a new book out. It charges that Democrats covered up Joe Biden's declining physical and cognitive health during his last few years of office. It kind of seems to me like everyone could see the physical decline, but I haven't read the book. That said, I'm unaware of any particular cognitive decline beyond the normal amount for an overworked 82-year-old who recently lost his son to cancer. So why does any of this matter now when we are in the midst of a fascist takeover of the American government and the constitutional order? Am I missing something? Because I was really irritated when I called my mom the other day, and the first thing she asked me was, well, what do you think about this Jake Tapper book? I don't care. Am I missing something here, Digby? Straighten me out, please.
You are 100% right.
Thank you.
And I am so happy to tell you that.
Good.
No, I feel exactly the same way. It's, you know, look, I've been very, you know, impatient with the navel gazing and the, you know, just the hair shirt that Democrats put on after the last election all the way along. This really has just gone way too far. It doesn't matter. He's gone. He, you know, we're not going to elect another old president again anytime soon. We're not going to face this issue again. It is meaningless. And they're trying to sort of drape it in the idea, oh, there was a big cover-up. There was no cover-up. We saw him every single time he was on camera. Everybody I knew was going, boy, Biden's looking old. And then guess what the Democrats did when it became clear and obvious that he couldn't, it wasn't that he couldn't govern, it was that he couldn't campaign properly.
He couldn't
walk.
They got
rid of him.
Yeah,
they got rid of him and they put somebody else who nobody's ever done that before. That's completely unprecedented. So, no, I don't want to hear it. And I think it's just this is you know, anybody who's been reading me for a long time knows the thing I used to call the village,
mm-hmm.
Which was the political establishment in Washington, including the journalists and all the people, you know, just sitting there wringing their hands over things like this. That's them. And it's happening again. And I have no patience for it whatsoever. It's irrelevant. We don't care what happened there. Let's move forward. We have, you know, Hitler. Let's deal with that.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. If we were not in the middle of this, I might say, oh, OK, let's talk about what they did, what mistakes Democrats made and whatever. And, you know, he should have never run. That was clear.
Get it?
But it wasn't a, you know, it's not a cover up or a controversy. He decided to run, whatever. And if I had to choose between Joe Biden in his condition right now as president or Donald Trump, my choice would be clear. But it seems to me that, and I don't want to let this get buried by this dumb book, but Joe Biden was still one of the most effective presidents we have ever had in this country, period. So,
which is why we stuck by him.
Yes.
Well, even though we could tell he was getting old, we're going, hey, look at all the good stuff he's doing.
He did,
you know?
Good,
I mean,
stuff, yeah.
The question is, on his worst day, is Joe Biden still 1,000% better than Donald Trump?
Yes.
Answer, yes. On her worst day, the next person in line, very articulate, the person who wiped Donald Trump the floor with him during the one debate they had,
yeah,
is Kamala Harris, 1,000 times better than Donald,
yes,
Trump. Yes, unequivocally. Third point, do you remember that 10 seconds after Barack Obama was inaugurated, everyone on the right and in the legacy media who did not want to relitigate what happened during the Bush administration said, let's all move on now. This is all Obama's thing. We're not going to talk about Bush anymore. And I watched the Iraq debacle, the Katrina, all of the Bush scandals, all the Bush crises just get bulldozed straight down the memory hole.
We're not going to look in the rearview mirrors.
What, yeah, nope.
That was President Obama who said that. I mean,
yeah, I know. And good. that was really, really wrong of him to do, because we really needed to litigate that correctly. But the right and the legacy media were happy to just, because they were both complicit, just forget about everything. Let's move on.
Oh, let's
Biden
definitely
had a successful
on.
Administration. Biden did really well. I don't mind relitigating anything he did.
Right.
He did a fine job.
Well, the thing that jumps out at me is I think in this case that legacy media gets to return to their happy place, which is,
yep, yeah,
Democrats,
yeah,
in disarray.
Yep. Villagers. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the thing. You can have this debate if you want, but I don't know that we have the time for it right now.
We don't. Literally. That's the problem.
And and just one sort of step beyond it before I get to my final question for you guys. But isn't Jake Tapper's indictment of Democrats actually an indictment of Jake Tapper for not reporting on this when it was actually relevant? I mean, I haven't read the book. Let's assume he makes a good argument. Shouldn't that argument have been made about 2 years ago rather than at this point?
Well, I mean, he was there. I don't know. And we all saw the same thing. It didn't need to be articulated. It was obvious.
It's right
and,
there.
You know, and also let's not just say it's Jake Tapper. There's another guy that his co-writer, Alex Thompson, who everyone needs to understand was the anti-Biden guy. He was going to write a book about Biden and it got canceled and he's got an axe to grind. And, you know, look, there's a lot going on there with this.
Enough said, because I didn't want to let him derail us for a moment. And here I gave him what,
here we are.
4 minutes. Finally,
shame on you. Shame.
Finally, over on Blue Sky, a listener there, longtime listener, Alan Grant is his name in Blue Sky. He complained that after we reported on the drop charges against Newark Mayor Roz Baraka the other day and the new indictments filed against Congresswoman LaMonica McIver, he wrote, quote, "Stop swinging at branches. They arrested a mayor and dropped the charges because it's more effective to arrest a congressperson. You're acting like we aren't effed." He says, "We're effed and you aren't helping with that innocent blather. That time has passed. Throw the gloves off." Now, I'm not sure what he actually has in mind, but is he right? Are folks like you guys and me not taking all of this seriously enough? Should we be more angry, more sleepless at night over it? Are we doing something wrong in our coverage? And you can just talk about my coverage. Never mind you guys. You guys are perfect. Am I screwing this up here?
It's on you, man. Obama's decline, Biden loss, it's pretty much entirely your fault, so congratulations.
I hope you can live with yourself. I on the other hand am doing it perfectly. My level of anger and my sleepless nights, let me just tell you, they are at the absolute zenith of anger and sleeplessness.
The right amount. Congratulations.
I am well known for sugarcoating things and not holding grudges or anything like that.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that.
All right.
Well, listen, I'm just not personally a big fan of giving up. That's just not my thing.
Well, no, they're not saying give up. He's saying we're not fighting hard enough.
Oh, I see.
Well, if I make a suggestion, just one suggestion.
Yeah.
We are trying to do things on the Professional Love Podcast.
Yeah.
Distinguishing between climate and weather. So what are the big things that are actually changing the topography of politics? And what are the smaller things that are outrageous and crazy, but aren't really fundamentally altering things and swinging at the first and not the second?
Gotcha.
I'm on the other hand, on my writing, I mean, I'm documenting the atrocities and, you know, I find it hard to believe anyone could say I'm not angry enough, but, you know, I suppose I could ratchet it up, but I'm just trying to, keep my eyes on the prize, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is trying to defeat the fascist, encroachment on our country. I don't know what else I can do.
Yeah, I feel like you. I feel like my job is not to be angry. My job is to make sure that people understand, that Americans understand what is actually going on. What they do with that is then up to me, up to them, not up to me. I can't even, figure out what I'm going to talk about for the next hour, much less what everybody else should be doing. All right, we got to wrap up. Hey, thank you, guys. Always a delight of sorts speaking with you. You can find Heather
Digby. Thank you.
You're welcome. You can find Heather Digby Parton over at salon.com and digbysblog.net. She is also on the Blue Skies at Digby56. And, of course, the inimitable Drift Glass discussing the difference between climate and weather over on his pro-left podcast, which is proleftpod.com. You can also find his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com. And you can find him on Blue Sky simply at driftglass. Thank you, guys. We'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Brent. Enjoy your time off.
Thanks. I need it. Okay, quick break, and we are back with, as promised, nothing but good news from Desi Doyen and the Green News Report to get you ready for summer. Are you ready for summer? If you are, stand by. Green News Report is next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast.
Okay. Well, if you made it this far, I guess I had to break the news. I lied. I said the GNR was nothing but good news today. And in fact, well, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
What we need right now is federal assistance.
Disaster victims in many states are still waiting for federal aid. Extreme weather disasters are a hidden risk that will upend mortgages, study warns. Plus, wildfires drove record losses in the world's forests in 2024.
All of that bad news and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What about wind and solar? I mean, should we really have wind and solar subsidies in this bill? What if it's not windy? What if it's not sunny?
I don't know. What if a once respected financial reporter named Maria Bartiromo goes to Fox News and loses her mind? Should we really have Fox News? This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, I kid, but you know, what if it's not windy? What if it's not sunny? Why do we even have solar or wind power at all? Obviously, it makes no sense. I need a job on Fox News.
Apparently, Maria Bartiromo doesn't know that batteries exist.
What? What do you got for us today, Des?
Well, first, at a meeting of the brand new FEMA Review Council this week, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem stated that the Federal Emergency Management Agency should be renamed and reformed to increase the burden on states to respond to natural disasters. Noem's comments came as victims in several states are still waiting for promised FEMA disaster assistance after multiple devastating storms over the last 3 months. The Trump administration has denied federal disaster funding for several states. In a hearing this week, Republican Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who last year voted against replenishing FEMA's disaster fund, pressed Secretary Noem to expedite disaster relief for deadly tornadoes over the last week in Missouri and for previous disasters.
The state has pending 3 requests for major disaster declarations from earlier storms. Will you help expedite those? We are desperate for the assistance in Missouri.
And the fact that I'm agreeing with Josh Hawley, of all people, my own home city of St. Louis got hit by a tornado last weekend, and it was not until Wednesday this week that FEMA even showed up.
Yep. And a new study warns that extreme weather linked to climate change is, quote, a hidden risk that will upend home mortgages and lead to rising foreclosure rates and more Americans losing their homes, particularly low to middle income households and areas with large numbers of underinsured homes. The new analysis from First Street, a nonprofit climate risk firm, projects that foreclosures could soar over the next 10 years by nearly 400%.
10% triggered by flooding, storms, and other extreme weather events, accounting for up to 30% of all foreclosures by 2035, in large part due to rising insurance premiums and the mounting cost of repairs.
Hey, we promised you bad news today, didn't we?
In other not great news, a disturbing new study warns that the planet may already be too hot for the polar ice sheets to survive due to man-made global warming driven by the burning of fossil fuels.
That is not great news.
The study projects that at just 1.5 degrees Celsius of global heating above pre-industrial levels, sea levels are likely to rise at rates that could, quote, stretch the limits of adaptation, faster than nations can build coastal defenses, and displacing millions of people, leading to, quote, catastrophic inland migration.
Yikes.
The scientists warn that by 2050, just 15 years from now, rising seas could cause global flood damages of at least $1 trillion a year for the world's 130 largest coastal cities. But they also emphasize that cutting climate warming emissions will help. Every fraction of a degree of avoided global warming will slow sea level rise and give countries more time to prepare. Another new study finds that massive fires fueled by climate change led global forest loss to smash records in 2024. According to a report this week from the University of Maryland, wildfires spiked 80% in 2024 compared to 2023, mainly because Brazil, the host of the upcoming Global Climate Summit in November, struggled to contain fires in the Amazon amid the worst drought ever recorded in the world's largest rainforest.
Yikes. A drought in a rainforest.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
And finally, a newly released poll shows a majority of registered voters in the United States want federal agencies to increase their efforts to protect people from the health harms of global warming, with 55% saying federal agencies should do more than they are currently doing.
And yet, the Trump administration is preparing to do much less. Told you we had nothing but bad news for you today. Oh, well, for much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. It's been a rough spring. We could sure use a new season around here. We will be off this next week after the Memorial Day holidays. We will see you thereafter. Hope you have a safe and healthy one. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yes.
Are you ready for the sunshine?
Yes, please.
Are you ready for the bread and beans, the apple trees, and a whole lot of good? Are you ready for the
yes,
summer?
I am. I am ready for the summer. We'll see what we get. We, as you heard, man, we are going to be off for the next week. Much needed break, but thank you for helping us get this far. We will see you soon. Our thanks again today to my producer, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
Thank you. And to our guests, Heather Digby-Parton of Salon and Drift Glass of the Pro Left podcast. And, of course, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us all spring and hopefully all summer long. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com or your favorite podcast site. But if you stop by bradblog.com/donate, you can help us fill up the Prius over the next week or so while we're tooling about. We could really use your support. And, oh, yeah, it would help us stay on your public airwaves. Thank you very much. We will see you soon. Until then, drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, I am TheBradBlog. Desi Doyen is...
at Green News Report.
That's it. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.